Not unusual for brothers and sisters to fight and argue with each other when they're young, while many siblings eventually resolve their conflicts for others. Simmering and sometimes overt resentments, hurts, and jealousies can last a lifetime. Jeannie Safer is a psychotherapist who had a troubled relationship with her only sibling, her brother. She interviewed 60 adults about the difficult, even toxic relationships with their brothers and sisters for her new book called Cain's Legacy. While she has advice for how to address and mend long-standing sibling conflicts, she also says that some of these relationships are not fixable. As I said, she's a psychotherapist, author of several books. The subtitle of her new one is Liberating Siblings from a Lifetime of Rage, Shame, Secrecy, and Regret. Jeannie Safer joins us from NPR's New York Bureau. And Jeannie Safer, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Delighted to be with you.
Let me begin where your book begins. I'm going to quote what you said. I had an older brother, but he was never a brother to me. And you go on to say that you could never actually be a sister to him. What was the root of your problem?
Isn't that a painful thing?
It was very
just
painful
to hear
me.
It. It's painful. It was painful to write and painful to read for me even now. The root of the problem was that my brother Stephen, who's 7 years older than I, was one of those problem kids. He never had a diagnosis, but he had trouble in school. He had trouble with friends. He had problems with weight and things like that. And then when I was born, I was the golden girl. And I was highly favored over him. And I did well in all the things he didn't do well in. And I think this set up a lifetime of strife between us that even my later efforts, much later when I realized that there was a real problem and that part of it had to do with me, even my later efforts were not able to solve. And when he died 5 years ago, mm-hmm. he also had physical problems. He had diabetes. He died a double amputee. Oh. We've been estranged for 5 years.
Wow. Well, and not to belabor this, but the beginning page of your book is so powerful, is that you didn't grieve at his funeral, but
yes.
but a year or so later you were at a jazz concert and just found yourself weeping, as you say, uncontrollably.
Yes. My brother was a fine musician and a professional musician at some points in his life. And it was interesting. And I said that I didn't grieve because I think it's important for siblings to hear that this is true for many of us. And that it's okay to say it doesn't make you a monster. It doesn't make you unable to love. It doesn't even mean your sibling isn't important to you. It just means that the relationship was so painful that you're relieved that it's not there to not work out. You know, particularly imagine a psychotherapist who can't have a relationship with her own brother. How difficult. So at that concert, a lot of feelings about what we could have had, what we should have had, came out. And I'm glad that they did, because grieving for a bad relationship or a relationship that never works out is very important, according to my ideas.
Well, you say an interesting thing, and as you said, you were your mother's favorite.
My father's.
And your father's as well. But
yes,
you also talk about an unhappy parent picking a favorite, that's a sign of an unhappy parent when they pick one child over another.
Yes. Well, I think there's some favoritism that's natural. You know, the kid who looks like you, who has the same talents, that sort of thing. But when it becomes dramatic and shocking the way it was in my family and in many of the families of people that I talk about, then it really makes problems. And what really makes problems is when the parents don't even think about it.
Mm. Don't even sort of acknowledge what they are doing within the family?
Yes, and the biggest thing that they don't do is to think about how the way they affect their children, the way they treat their children, has to do with how they were treated and their own sibling relationships. That's something that I've never heard anybody say, really, until I said it, you know, because I experienced it, that my parents' relationships with their own siblings and their own places in the family had a lot to do with how they treated my brother and me.
But don't you think, I mean, I grew up one of three children, and we were mm-hmm. treated differently by our parents. I mean, we were very also, and continue,
you're lucky.
And continue to be very different from each other. But it seems that parents, and maybe rightfully so, or maybe wrongfully so, do often treat their children in different manners.
Well, it's impossible not to, because, of course, every child has different parents. You know, we think about it, although they may be biologically the same, because you're different people, you bring up different things for them. You know, a girl who looks just like her mother, a boy who has athletic talent that his father didn't have, all of those things are going to affect the way a parent treats a child. So that's normal. But the kinds of favoritism that I'm talking about, would you like an example of
yes,
my
I
favorite?
Would. Yes,
yes,
please.
This is in my extended family. And this is a cousin of mine. And she told me she was many years younger than her sister, I think 12. And when she was born, her mother installed a dog gate, you know, to keep an animal out of a room, on the sister's room to keep her out. And the sister, of course, took great advantage of this, took all the little one's toys and this kind of thing. And when the baby objected, the toddler objected, the mother did nothing. And I said to my cousin, and I never knew this. I mean, I knew them, but I never knew this. And I said to my cousin, why did your mother do such a thing? It seems so insane. And this was not a crazy woman. I mean, I knew her. She was a nice woman. She told me that her mother had been the eldest with a baby sister many years younger, and guess who was favored? The baby. So she was going to fix it by doing the opposite. This is a common, terrible strategy.
Well, indeed, but I think what you're also saying is that parents need to be very aware about their own impulses, their own childhoods, and their how they treat their children.
Marnie, it's so important. It's the most important thing you can do for a child. You know, there are all these books about siblings without rivalry and how we can fix our children, but I say that the way to really make a difference is to think more about your own childhood and less about your children. I know it sounds kind of counterintuitive, but that example was really a potent example of what I'm talking about.
Because what you're saying, there are all these sort of unconscious feelings,
yes,
impulses, recreations that a parent feels when they're raising their children.
Absolutely. How can it not be?
Yeah.
You know, that we project our own history on our children. And that's normal. But what if we know it, we can modify it, we can understand it, we can change it some ways. That's what's really important. Knowledge is power.
Kids fight. I mean, I think anyone that grows up in a family, you know, little children, they fight with each other, whether it's over toys or over, you know, a whole host of who gets to go to bed later than the other one.
Right.
That's normal. And I
of
would
course.
Say, and I would say for a lot of siblings, they resolve those conflicts as they get older. But it sounds like what you're talking about are people who just have not been able to resolve those conflicts, and they have simmered and influenced them as adults.
Sometimes they don't even simmer. Sometimes it's downright war. The difference, I make a distinction between what I call kind of universal sibling rivalry and what I call sibling strife. The difference is that sibling rivals, as you say, work it out later, and they basically have something good together. You know, they like each other. They have times when they're friends. Strife-ridden siblings never do. They never feel happy in each other's company from childhood often to adulthood. And this is the tragedy of that situation. You feel these things even after the person dies. It's a whole different thing. When you have only one sibling and that sibling and you don't get along, you never know the consolations and the security and the tenderness of intimacy with your closest relative.
Which I guess when you think about it makes sense, because a sibling is oftentimes that is your longest relationship. It's
yes.
the person that knows you at birth or you knew at their birth.
Yes, and we have relationships with siblings. The statistic is between 50 and 80 years. It's a long time, right?
It is.
We know our parents about 30 to 50 years. And it's one of the statistics I found is that 90% of people over the age of 65 have a living sibling. So they follow us from childhood all the way. We recognize them before we recognize our own fathers. So this is a big deal relationship.
Indeed. And how common would you say are conflicted sibling relationships in adulthood?
Well, the studies that I've seen suggest at least one-third of people say they don't get along with their siblings. And if you really question them closely, if you do more testing or if a clinician does it, it's up to 45%. Isn't that something? So I wrote this book to help people recognize these relationships and see whether they could do anything about them. Because the biggest problem with siblings is we kind of think of them as that we leave them when we move out of the house and we never have to deal with them again. But they come with us because they're inside us.
You also write about something in your book that you call SIB speak, S-I-B.
Yes, it's a new language I made up.
Yes, it is. But it's provocative.
A very old language.
Tell us what sib speak is.
Yes, I said it partially to be amusing, but this is a language. It sounds like English or whatever your native language is, but the difference is the communication or the exchange of information is not the point of sib speak. Grievance collection is.
Oh.
So I'll give you an example.
Please.
That will immediately make it clear. a brother said to one of my subjects, "You never thanked me for the flowers I gave you in 1982.
Yikes.
Now, this was not 1982. This was 2010.
So harboring a resentment for decades.
Yes. Or mother always loved you best. Or... you know, Dad always did things for you and never for me. Or one, again, in my own extended family, which really was jaw-dropping. This was at a funeral. The elder brother, who was quite successful, said to the younger brother, who was kind of a star, "You know, when I went through Mom's house, there was a closet full of stuff and clippings and things about you, and only a cigar box of things about me."
Oh.
And, you know, the problem is, another way you know that people are speaking sib speak is that you're paralyzed. There's this terrible silence that comes over the person who has just been spoken to in the language, or they change the subject. So one of the things I talk about at length is what you can do instead of that.
So what can you do instead of that?
Confront it.
The
way that we keep sib speak going for generations is by pretending nothing's going on. If the answer to, you know, there was only a cigar box of my stuff is a long pause and then saying, "Well, do you think Romney's going to get the nomination? You're not going to get out of it."
but perhaps a response to that would be, "I'm sorry."
I have a slightly different one because okay. You know, I was the favorite. There's many right ones. The first thing is you want to address it. I said to my brother at some point, "I was very, very favored over you, and it was unfair. And I'm sorry that it's come between us over all these years. But now that our parents are gone, let's see if we can have a relationship that's not about that."
Mm.
That's what I said.
And what did he say?
He was struck by it. I think there was too much water under the bridge for us to really fix that. But I'm so glad I said it because it was so true. And when a sibling says something to you like, "You never call me," you say, "Well, we're talking now. Let's really talk." Or, you know, "It pains me that you feel envious of me all the time." Or, "You know, I did appreciate the flowers. And why do you think I never am grateful for anything you do for me?" In other words, not to just take it and go away and think, "Oh, God, thank goodness I don't have to talk to her anymore for another year."
Well, let me pick up on that because we have to take a very short break. And
sure.
Then we'll get back to our conversation. I also want to open up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. We are talking about sibling relationships. Our guest is Jeannie Safer, author of a new book called Cain's Legacy, subtitled Liberating Siblings from a Lifetime of Rage, Shame, Secrecy, and Regret. 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Supporting WHYY, Lincoln, introducing the new 2013 Lincoln MKS with continuously controlled damping, or CCD. More at Lincoln.com. Lincoln, now it gets interesting.
Woodmere Art Museum in Chestnut Hill supports WHYY and celebrates nature-inspired art in Force of Nature. Two exhibitions now through April 22nd. Telling the story of Philadelphia's art and artists, Woodmere pays tribute to Elaine Kurtz in a retrospective ranging from geometric explorations of optical effects and color to dense canvases conveying the energy of nature. A companion group exhibition showcases a potent set of works that evokes the natural world. 215-247-0476 or woodmereartmuseum.org.
Laurel Richie made a career slam dunk when she was appointed president of the Women's National Basketball Association. Her climb to the top may have taken her on a few turns, but her advice to others is straight to the hoop.
Be authentic and be honest and have fun.
Our Wisdom Watch conversation with the president of the WNBA, Laurel Richie. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Support for WHYY comes from the BBC. Introducing BBC World News, the 24-hour global news network, now available on Xfinity TV. More at bbcxfinity.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. It's not unusual for children to bicker and battle with each other when they're growing up. But for others, unresolved hurts and jealousies can accompany them into adulthood and even have lasting influence on their other relationships, including their relationships within their families. We're talking about siblings today on Radio Times with psychotherapist Jeannie Safer, author of this new book called Cain's Legacy. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499 if you have any questions or comments for our guest. Let me just go back to Sib Speak, just because I want to make sure our listeners understand it, because you also say at the root of it is something passive aggressive. Can you expand on that a bit?
Well, it can be passive aggressive or aggressive aggressive, actually, because when you're collecting grievances, you're always angry and you're always hurt. Because otherwise, you wouldn't say to your sister, you know, our mother always babysits more for you than me. You wouldn't say it. It comes from hurt. It comes from anger. And it's usually kind of subtle because you're waylaying the person. Oh, by the way, Sibsby can be silent also. Someone told me that she went to Thanksgiving and there was her sister. She does much better than her sister financially and otherwise. And her sister didn't say hello to her.
Oh, wow.
And I said, so what did you do? And she said, I didn't say hello either. So I'm suggesting, I said, okay, Christmas is coming up. Now Easter's coming up. Say hello, whether she said hello or not. You know, in other words, take initiative.
You mentioned anger and hurt in the same sentence.
Yes.
Are they the opposite sides of the same emotional coin?
Yes, they are. When it comes to sibling relationships, for sure. Some people, women tend to be a little bit more comfortable talking about hurt and upset. Men, a little more comfortable about talking about anger. But it really comes down to the same thing. It's mom loved you best. Dad loved you best. I'm the odd one out. You got things I didn't. Life is unfair, and you're the cause of it. And being a victim like that, you know, it started with Cain and Abel, and it's gone. And I have a chapter about the wacky siblings in the book of Genesis. It's quite an array, believe me.
It is, although I do want to focus on current day relationships.
Sure, of course.
But
they're the same.
Well, interesting, isn't that? I'm also thinking about the siblings that have a kind of a polite but mm-hmm. not particularly close relationship with
cordial,
each other.
Cordial, we call
cordial,
it.
Cordial,
yes.
Exactly.
Or I call them wedding and funeral siblings.
The idea that
you show up for the events.
And does that tell you that there are unresolved issues
Absolutely.
Between these siblings?
Absolutely. They're uncomfortable with each other. They're not close. If you're close to somebody, you don't just go to the wedding or the funeral, or you don't just show up for Easter or Passover. You know, you have a relationship. You talk to each other. When you're in need, the other one comes to your assistance. When something good happens, you know, they call you and say, congratulations, you just had a book published, you know, or I saw you on TV or whatever it is, or, you know, you got a raise. These are the kind of people, the cordial ones, where you would never call your brother or your sister to say the kind of things that you would say to any good friend, like, guess what, I got a promotion. Now, that's one of the ways you can tell. You're uncomfortable. You're glad that the interaction is over. You're relieved that you got through it. It's a painful thing.
And if you see their phone number on, you know, coming up on your phone, you may not pick it up. Yes.
Yes. And you bless caller ID. Whenever you bless caller ID, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know? But the thing that troubles me here is that people just leave it alone. They think, okay, you know, we don't get along well, and they never really think about it. Now, sometimes there's nothing to be done, but sometimes if you raise it with somebody, you can do a lot. I mean, I have many examples in my book of people who actually resolved some shockingly bad relationships by addressing them, by changing, by understanding.
Well, one of the things you have thinking new thoughts about siblings, one is which we have talked about, which is facing the problem. I mean, I guess part of the figuring out what to do about the problem is to recognize that there is one.
Oh, that is the critical thing. This book is about consciousness raising.
Right.
There's another thing. In addition to inventing SibSpeak, I also invented something I call the geographical proximity fallacy.
I saw that.
That sounds very fancy.
It does.
What that means is, you know, if we lived across the street, we'd be good friends. And I'm thinking, well, you lived in the same house and you couldn't stand each other. Because the fact is that it's an excuse. If you really wanted to have a relationship, distance wouldn't make a difference.
Right. Because you pick up the phone or you make special efforts to actually be together.
Of course you would.
You also,
and so the first thing is recognizing that you are denying that there's a problem or thinking you could just put it aside.
Another thing you say is accept that you don't really know your sibling. And I circled that because I think that that's actually pretty profound, where we think we know these people, but perhaps we really don't know who it is we're dealing with.
We really don't. First of all, they may have changed.
Right.
And second of all, I guarantee their experience of you and your parents and your childhood experience was different from yours. Because all siblings have different parents, even if they're biologically the same. Because you have different relationships with them. So you don't really know who you are in your sibling's eyes. And that's one exercise I suggest, is trying to think about that. I mean, I spoke to somebody recently about this. She said, why is my sister so resentful of me? Mm-hmm. She said, I don't understand it. She's a doctor. She does very well. She makes more money than I do. She's married. I'm not. Why is this? Why does she always stick it to me? Why does she always make me miserable when I'm around her? And I said, well, I said, were you favored? And she said, and this one said, no, I don't really think I was. And as we started to talk, it turned out that her sister, even though she was a doctor and she had actually had wanted to be an actress and resented and envied her sister who had a career as a journalist because she was doing what she loved.
Huh. And were they able to get to that, these two?
Not well, we just had this conversation last week. I hope I planted a seed for people to think about. One of the things that was very interesting to me is after I did these interviews, which kind of felt like sibling therapy,
I talked
to people for a long time, I got a lot of feedback that people opened a conversation with their siblings, which I was really gratified to hear.
Well, which goes back to something you say about Sigmund Freud in your book, which is that in all his writings, he barely or rarely ever touched on the sibling relationship, but within his own family, there were all sorts of sibling issues, if I can use
that
word.
Well, that's why I didn't do it, right?
Denial,
he was
right?
He was one of eight children. There are five references to brothers and sisters in his 404-page index of his works. Okay, no references to siblings. However, I noted there is a reference to Siberia, and my idea was that he sent them all there. and of course, just because he didn't deal with them meant that he had sibling issues all his life. Because when you don't deal with your siblings, you do. You know, he had difficulty with peers. He had difficulties with competition, with envy, all those sorts of things. His relationship with Jung was quite something, as we all know.
Yes, it is. Yes, it was. But you're also talking about just the power of denial, to literally deny what's right there in front of you.
Well, in therapy, siblings are never mentioned. I mean, I specialize in dealing with siblings, particularly siblings who have had a very seriously mentally or physically dysfunctional sibling. And these people have had therapy for years, and it never came up.
Wow.
Because therapists are also kind of brainwashed that it's not important, particularly because a lot of people who have troubled sibling relationships go into the helping professions.
Oh, well, that's interesting, because they need all that therapy, right?
That's right.
Well, let me ask you. I do want to get to our callers then, but
sure.
But let's say we've got siblings listening to the show, and I'm sure we do.
I hope so.
what is that first step that you think people should take if they feel like they have a troubled or conflicted relationship with their sibling?
The first step is to think about it, is to say, I have this relationship. It's a problem. I want to do something about it. Do not wait, like the woman I talked to, for your sister to say hello to you.
Yeah.
You know, address the person, and I'm recommending several possibilities of things you can do. You can take the direct route, which I'm a kind of direct route person, but to say, look, you know, we've had a lot of trouble all our lives together, and I really want to make our relationship better as we're getting older. What can we do? Tell me how you see me. Let's talk about this. Let's see what we can do. That's one way. The other way is by deeds rather than words, which is to help out, you know, to do things. To make the person feel more a part of your life. And sometimes that opens a door to more communication. That's the first thing. But I also recommend a lot of thinking inside yourself before you even talk to a sibling, like trying to understand, you know, as you asked me before, who is this person?
Right.
And one of the things that's very useful is to say, who is this person outside his or her relationship with me? Who is she as our parents child? Who is she or he as a professional, as a parent, as a friend? Who is this person? And to get a sense that they may be quite different from the way they are with you. There may be lots to admire, in fact.
Well, you just have
my brother, I think, got along better with others than with me.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, let me quickly reintroduce you, and that's Jeannie Safer, our guest today on Radio Time. She's a psychotherapist and author of a new book called Cain's Legacy, and it's about, as the subtitle says, liberating siblings from a lifetime of rage, shame, secrecy, and regret. One open line at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get some callers in on the conversation. We have Joe from, looks like, Phoenixville. And Joe, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, I want to say hello. And
hello.
I would like to explain my situation, although mm-hmm. it's not unique, I'm sure. It must be unusual.
Certainly not.
Well, I always felt that my older sister, it's just the two of us, was the favored. But this was sort of confirmed in my own mind when about a year ago, I learned that my father, who's in his mid-90s, in his will, he doesn't have an equal division between the two of us.
This happens all the time. It's a terrible thing.
Are you kidding?
Thing.
All the time?
Oh, yes. I have a whole chapter about it.
Yeah,
I have a whole chapter about this.
Yeah, hold on. Joe, just finish your thought there, and we'll give Jeannie a chance to weigh in. But you're saying you felt as if your sister was the favored one, and when you look at the will, it looks like she truly was.
She truly was, and it really was. It was the first time I had this absolute visceral feeling that it has been confirmed. And of course, I'm dealing with that, and I'm seeking counseling for that. And it's very, very difficult because he's still alive.
Well, and Joe, I appreciate the call. It's obviously a very poignant issue. And Jeannie Safer, go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering, have you talked to your sister about this? Have you mentioned?
No. No, I have no. Well, right now, I'm not inclined to have any contact.
Right. Well, at some point, I'm not saying now because you're in therapy, which is a very wise move, you may really want to tell her how much that hurts you and how much it's going to damage your relationship in the future, and also to tell your father, because this is a way that parents express favoritism. Beyond the grave, it's awful. I have a chapter about wills. I call it the poisoned legacy. And I'm sorry to hear it, but you're doing exactly the right thing, which is to look into your own feelings. And one thing I should recommend to you, whatever happens with money, do not let this poison your own life. Mm-hmm. Because the worst thing the unfavored sibling can do is to feel like a victim forever. That way they get power over you forever.
Joe, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And I wonder, Jeannie, whether there's any sort of sense of consolation, if I can use that word, which is a reality check, which is Joe's reality is true, that he,
yes.
you know, that his sister was the favored one. So, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, and also
is.
to know that it's unfair, and it doesn't mean that there's something horribly wrong with you. It has to do with who your parents were and how they saw you, and by understanding where it came from, you can free yourself from having a definition of yourself for your whole life as the unfavored one. It's hard work.
Yes.
But people do it. They really can.
Well, good luck, Joe, and I appreciate the call.
Good luck, Joe.
Yeah, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Amanda from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. And Amanda, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi
there.
I just wonder, what is your advice when there's a sibling who is extremely verbally abusive and communication doesn't work? You know, this is the oldest sibling of three siblings who basically terrorizes everybody in the family. And nobody's willing to really cut that person off or do anything to create boundaries. How do you deal with, say, something like that you're required to be in contact with?
I hear this a lot. Now, first of all, are your parents kind of encouraging everybody to continue to talk and take this abuse?
Yes, they feel terrorized too, but they just want to avoid, and just every
That's
time
very typical.
A fight happens. They don't want to deal with it, and they're just kind of afraid of her. Well, hold on. Go ahead, Jean. That's okay. With the authority
invested in me, I recommend that you take the first step and say to this person, if you continue to treat me this way, we are having no more relationship. Because brotherhood and sisterhood must be earned. You have to act decently. Just because blood is thicker than water does not mean you have to drink it. And you've got to get out of this. Even if everybody in the family is frightened, you stand up for yourself and do not be a masochist just because you're related.
Amanda, I have a quick question for you. Do your siblings share your same frustration?
Yes, my one other sibling feels even more so than I have that she's been really tortured by this sibling her whole life, just psychologically.
And do you feel like you could go with that sibling to the sibling that's being abusive, and so at least you're not alone in this?
Yes. I mean, we've both slowly kind of started to create some distance, but good. We still sort of feel required to be around for family events and occasions, and it's difficult.
Sure.
Well, I would also recommend that you tell your parents that if they want the two of you, it's good, strength in numbers, if they want the two of you at family events, the other person can't be there, or if they start to behave badly, you're leaving. You really can be very strong about this, and you'll feel better. And good luck to you both in a very difficult and common situation.
Yeah, Amanda, I appreciate
Thank you.
You're very welcome, Amanda. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Bettini, what you're also saying is that some of these sibling relationships are not fixable. Nonetheless,
yes,
their family,
right.
their family events. I mean, your paths are going to cross unless, like Amanda, you sort of lay down the law and refuse to participate.
Sometimes you have to. If you're dealing with somebody who's mentally or physically abusive to you or damaging to your children or something like that, why on earth, just because you have the same last name or the same DNA, should you have to deal with them? You know, and this is something that really troubles me because a lot of therapists and the culture in general is always pushing that we should always reconcile. Well, and forgive, which is something I also wrote a book about.
Yeah.
But I believe that these things should be earned by the person's behavior or attempts to change it. And if they can't or they won't, why should you put yourself in a position? You're not going to get a brotherhood or sisterhood from a person like this until they fix themselves.
Well, but it's, and I understand exactly what you're saying, and I can see how it absolutely would work in certain sort of toxic situations. But it seems to me that you also have to reconcile to yourself, you know, that you are cutting off a relationship with someone that you grew up with.
That's absolutely right. And I feel that a healthy estrangement, and I have a chapter on how to do it, has to be conscious and always involves a sense of loss.
So you have to grieve
and
it, mourn
it. It is painful. Yes. Yes, and then you can move on and find true psychological brothers and sisters outside your family.
So the idea is that there are people out there that you can adopt as your siblings?
That's right. That's right. Many people, I've noticed among my patients and for myself too, have found kind of surrogate brothers and sisters. I realized that I had a lot of close male friends. And then I understood why.
Because of your brother.
I longed for a fraternal relationship, and I found it.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about siblings with psychotherapist Jeannie Safer. She's written a new book called Cain's Legacy, and it's about liberating siblings from a lifetime of rage, shame, secrecy, and regret. A full bank of calls here. We're going to get back to our conversation and our callers after the short break. Stay with us.
Programming is supported by 21st Century Cyber Charter School, providing public online education for grades 6 through 12, utilizing the latest information and communication technology. More information at 21stcenturycyber.org.
Jeffrey Gettleman is getting a George Polk Award this week for being the first to report from Somalia that the militant Islamist group Al-Shabaab had prevented starving people from leaving the country. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Gettleman about his reporting on the famine and the Shabaab. Gettleman is the New York Times East Africa Bureau Chief. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. If you could take a pill to forget the emotion around a bad relationship or how witnessing war made you feel, would you take that pill? Also, a father and son's journey back to baseball after almost giving up on the game in the wake of the steroid scandal. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Beneficial Bank supports WHYY and offers the Start Rewarding Package to help match your goals, your budget, and the ways you use your money. Beneficial Bank. Start Rewarding Package details at branch offices or at thebeneficial.com/startrewarding.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about troubled sibling relationships with Jeannie Safer. She's been a longtime psychotherapist and has written several other books, including The Normal One, Death Benefits, and Beyond Motherhood. We have a full bank of calls here. Let me see what Laurel from Cherry Hill has to say. And Laurel, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Can you hear me on my cell phone?
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Go ahead, Laurel.
I just wanted to say that, I'm 60 years old, and my relationship with my brother, my sister, has been, like you describe, my whole life, and particularly came out in big guns when my parents died when I was 26. And they died six weeks apart. And it became very clear, the feelings that my brother and my sister had towards me. I'm the youngest by 10 and 9 years. I guess I was the favored one in their eyes, and there was lots of resentment and just a history of what you're talking about. I've tried throughout my life to normalize that. I've done many of the steps that you suggested. I've confronted them when things have been said. I've tried to initiate communication and relationship. I've had some success to a certain extent, but then, you know, with my sister. But it's I have a brother and a sister, and it's different for each. But but it's the same thing. And I guess I particularly feel it around Christmas time.
Sure. And Laurel, Laurel, if you don't mind, only do you want to have a better relationship with your siblings, or do you feel like you've done everything and here you are?
Well, it depends on when you speak to me.
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand.
Yeah, people do have ambivalence about.
No, go ahead, Jeannie.
People do have ambivalence.
I would like to have peace with it, and it's the and even knowing that I've invested, I feel like it, you know, like I am having a little bit better relationship with my brother, but I have very little trust.
No, I hear you, Laurel. If you don't mind, only just and we would love to hear, you know, the details. Unfortunately, we won't be able to do that on the radio, but I think we have a sense of what you're dealing with. Let me give Jeannie Safer a chance to weigh in.
Well, this is a very difficult situation, but, you know, not every relationship is fixable, even if you make all the efforts, except inside yourself. And sometimes you have to come to terms with the fact that someone will not meet you halfway. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I can suggest adding to this is I don't know if you have ever frankly acknowledged that you were favored. This is something that people don't tend to do. And I find that it can be very useful to say, I really was favored over you. I was the baby, and it wasn't fair. And, you know, it was not a good thing. Now, can we have a relationship? That could help. Good luck to you.
Well, because the favored child feels guilty?
Yes. And never wants to admit it. And we know it, of course. Favored children go through life knowing on some level that they were unfairly favored.
Yeah. Because it's always unfair, right?
Of course.
Within a family.
You know, even if you're a genius, it doesn't matter. Still. And I think that saying these things out loud, you know, which was something that I did finally when I figured it out, really makes a difference, at least to you.
Well,
maybe to your brother and sister, too.
Yeah, Laurel, good luck. And I'm sorry to jump in there only just because one's got the sense of just how complicated this is.
But no, absolutely. Sure. These situations are, one of the things I noticed when I was doing interviews is that they could go for 3 hours.
Sure, sure.
But people also don't exactly know what the problem is or how they feel about it often. You know, and sometimes that's why I suggest thinking before you talk to your sibling. Like, what do you really feel? What do you really want? You know, is this somebody that you want in your life? Would you have a terrible sense of regret if they died, or would you be relieved? You know, be frank with yourself about what's possible.
And I guess also think about whatever your role is in that relationship, right?
Yes,
which
of
is
course.
Sometimes tricky.
Are there always tricky?
Are there differences? I mean, if you've looked at brothers, sisters, 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 are there certain dynamics there, or does gender not matter when talking
you
about
know,
sibling?
You know, I think the parent-sibling relationships are a much bigger deal than the gender specifically. You know, in some families, it's better to be the girl or the boy. Sometimes brothers can work these things out more through activities and sisters through talking. But I didn't see a big difference, frankly, in these things.
Let me see what Alejandro from West Grove has to say. Alejandro, go ahead. Your radio times.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Hi. Well, I just actually kind of wanted to give a different perspective. I'm number 3 out of 4 siblings, and both my parents grew up with rough sibling relationships, and they're still not fully intact. However, my parents made a tremendous effort, and successfully, I would say, to make each and every one of me and my 4 siblings feel included and feel loved. And
wonderful.
And that doesn't, that doesn't mean we were treated the same, you know. I guess I tended to get a little more trouble or so than the mother siblings, but you know, so we're each treated as needed or dealt with as needed, as far as parenting, but we were all but my parents did make that effort to show us that love. Well, and I think, you know, and we grew up not wealthy by any stretch, so
no, but that's a wonderful thing, and I bet you have pretty decent relationships with your siblings because of that too.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, we all talk pretty frequently and keep up to date on one another.
Oh, lucky you.
And well, your parents did the right thing. It's very impressive when parents who have problems can really decide not to set the next generation in the same course and succeed.
Alejandro, yeah, thanks for calling into Radio Times. It's good to hear a good news story as we talk about these conflicted relationships. I appreciate the call to Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. I've been a big fan for a long time.
Oh, thanks so much, Alejandro.
Right. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Let me get
to... See, here's where the parents fixed it by recognizing that there was a problem. That's a wonderful story, and that's what parents should give parents hope, that if they think about things, they can make a difference with their children.
You also talk about in the book two sisters, Cynthia and Lynn, who looked like, you know, they were not going to be able to work out the relationship, but they were able to reconcile some of their conflicts.
Oh, it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
They really
were.
It may
be surprising to everybody.
Yes, and they just took a vacation together. I was just astonished. Right. And when they started out, you never would have imagined that anything good would have come of it. But they really, really tried, and particularly Cynthia, who is very psychologically sophisticated, and I thought that what she was doing was trying to get her sister to tell her that everything was okay, that she was the favored one and so forth. And she actually wrote a letter to her sister that I edited to get out all the references to wanting the sister to fix her. So, and they, but they really worked it out, and several did. Males and you know, brothers and sisters too.
Well, it sounds like but they worked at it. I mean, this was not something they could do in a casual kind of way. They had to really.
No one can. You know, this is a quick fix culture, and these relationships started sometimes 50 years ago. It takes a long time to get out of something that's been festering and unaddressed, and you feel guilty about or rageful about. So think of this as a long-term project, but any effort that you make is already a good effort. It makes a difference. You feel you've done something. You've started a path.
Let's see what looks like Jen from Royersford has to say. And Jen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi
there.
I was just hoping to get some advice. I have a younger sister who I'm very close with, and then I have an older brother who's kind of like the black sheep of the family.
Mm.
He's a recovering addict, and he is, you know, really trying hard to get his life back together. But how do you build a relationship with someone who continues to hang out with people who are making poor choices?
Oh, that's a tough situation.
Oh, is that
Jen?
A
Go
tough
ahead.
One?
Go ahead, Jenny.
Well, one thing I can say to you is that you have to tell him that you want a relationship with him, but he has got to do certain things in order for that relationship to work out, and you will back him up, you will support him, you'd even go to, you know, to Al-Anon or whatever kind of meetings with him, but that mm-hmm. as long as he does that, you can't really be with him until he isn't destroying himself or you.
Does that make sense, Jen?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's just, he just surrounds himself with these people, and
you can't be part of it, Jen.
For me, yeah.
You can't be part of it, Jen. Good luck to you.
My parents are trying to build that relationship with us, but it's hard. You know?
Yeah.
Well, they have to set limits too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, setting limits is very, you must set limits with a sibling. We always think that families get a free pass. They don't.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jen. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. Jeannie, going back to something that a previous caller talked about the death of a parent or death of parents.
Yes.
It seems to me that that's an opportunity to, you know, to address things, but it also can, you know, reinforce old hurts and old jealousies and, you know,
it's
problems.
Such a painful thing. I only had one example in the book where the parents left the money unfairly, and the two brothers came to their sister and said, "We are not allowing this. You are getting a third." That was one case. Usually the one who gets it. I have several people whose the family home was left to the other sibling, including one man who actually built the house, was given to the sister, and the siblings were perfectly fine with it. Now, this to me is a deal breaker, you know.
And by that you mean it's like that really severs the relationship?
I think so. Or it certainly means that you can't trust this person to be on your side. And I think that you should tell them so, that going along with this is unfair and wrong, and you feel it, and it's going to have an effect on your relationship, you know, and that you wish it wouldn't be. It's terrible.
It is terrible.
Common.
Well, I was going to say, I know various versions of this,
yes, right,
of
don't
this
we
scenario.
All.
Exactly. Let me see what Kim from Philadelphia has to say. Kim, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi
there.
I have just one sibling. I'll try to be as quick with this as possible.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I have just my sister and I, and we're close in age. I've been sick my whole life, and my parents almost lost me at a very young age, and then again throughout life. And at the same time, I was considered the popular, smart, creative one.
A problem for you.
My sister. I defended my sister when we were younger, when people teased her, tried to get her to come places with me, heard her expressing to my parents how much she hated me at a young age. That devastated me. As we got older, she became embarrassed of me because for a while my illness was considered mental, and it really was later properly diagnosed. So then she was embarrassed of me. So I was dealing with guilt, shame, you know, how do I maneuver and navigate all of this? And I've come to forgiveness over and over. And as well, I was also considered, interestingly, throughout life, I would experience, even though I was younger, I would experience things ahead of her. And at one point, she used to come to me for advice.
Hmm.
Now, and we are extreme opposites as well.
And Kim, let me ask you, what is, in a nutshell, what is your relationship today?
It's polite. We have a deep...
That's damning, isn't it?
we have a deep love for each other.
Right.
We live a great distance. We live a great distance. But when we are together or near each other or even when we talk, it's very surface.
Do you feel there's anything that you could do to make it better, or have you tried everything you could think of?
I'm not sure. I've tried many different times. What ends up happening, she's a very strong, overbearing kind of personality. And what I will do is, I'm more of like a gentle kind of personality, so I will end up just shutting down. And I will keep quiet because, as well, health-wise, I can't deal, to allow anger and stress and stuff like that, that's kind of like a luxury I can't afford.
Yeah,
and so I end up just But I don't. There's something inside of me. I don't want to give up. She's my only sibling.
Maybe you should try to write her a letter. I would suggest not an email. Why don't you try to write her a letter with some of the ways you feel, and see if that has any effect. Sometimes a little distance and the fact that you've made the effort of that kind can make a difference. Good luck to you. This is a very complicated situation. But, you know, one thing you want to tell her is that you like to be able to get along better, but if she continues to be angry and furious with you all the time, you're not going to be able to do it. So that
right.
she, there's certain things she has to do differently if you're going to have a relationship. Good luck to you.
Yeah, Kim. I mean, again, that's a bold thing for someone to do, Jeannie, which is sort of, you know, lay
down
the
ground. I'm encouraging boldness, Mike. Because what is our choice?
There is something you said about.
Kim, I'm sorry to do this only because we only have about a minute, and I know we're just not going to be able to address the fullness of your concerns and your questions. But I do appreciate the phone call to Radio Times. Jeannie, we only have about a minute here, but you know, the lines have stayed full the full hour. What does that tell you?
That says that people have a lot of problems with these relationships. There is no shame in it. Face it, look at it, read Cain's Legacy. It'll give you some clues about how to approach this thing. Don't just let this be in the closet. Bring it out where you can make a difference, and you can always make a difference, even if it's only in yourself. And I did that myself, and others have too.
But you did that after your brother had died, right?
Yes. I started before.
Right.
But sometimes you can only do it after a person dies. The point is to bring it out of storage, out of mental storage. Do not allow sibspeak. Do not allow the geographic proximity fallacy. Face it in yourself. Grieve if you have to. Address your sibling if you can.
Well, on that note, Jeannie Safer, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. The book is called Cain's Legacy, Liberating Siblings from a Lifetime of Rage, Shame, Secrecy, and Guilt. And regret. Sorry, got my emotions confused there. And she is a psychotherapist. Joined us from the NPR studios in New York. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of the show, is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscow, and thank you so much for joining us.